And we should mention, by the way, that a video was created. I happened to be working for a video production company at the time, or at least that was part of their work, CAT, K-A-T, marketing, and we did a prevention video on this, and we knew at the time, and I think we started that project maybe 5 or 6 months after the
that was about
crash.
May of 12, I believe.
Yeah, we did. You know, we knew that some time had to pass so that people could heal a little bit. I mean, grief lasts forever, but the first thing we did was send letters to the families, giving them a heads up that this is something we were thinking about, and more or less, wanting their blessing to a certain extent. We wouldn't, just wanted to proceed carefully, respectfully, that sort of thing. And I'm pretty sure that I heard from your family first, or I might have gone ahead and called too after the.
No, I remember getting your letter. I was so excited when I read that and got it. I was like, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. And that's what I was leading up to. You were the first person that said, I'm in.
Yep. Absolutely. Like I said, anything to help to try to prevent it.
So even that early.
Yep.
Even that early, you knew.
Yep. That was right after my turning point at Heartview.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When I started.
Okay. So everything fell.
It fell into place perfectly. Into play.
Yeah. Yeah, because, without you, without the driver of the vehicle, I don't feel there would have been a project. I mean.
Yeah, or it wouldn't have been as impactful as
right,
it is now.
Right. Yep. I mean, to hear it, as they say, from the horse's mouth, I mean, you got to, the power of having the kind of the main character in some ways. And then. Gradually, we did get the blessing of at least one very important family member from each family. We really had five stories to tell, because there were five in the car, and I think that your best friend Jared, mm-hmm. and we don't have to use last names on this program if we don't want to, but I mean he was the other.
Survivor.
And tell us his story a little bit.
Jared.
That's powerful.
Yeah, Jared, he was sitting behind me. He was in the passenger in the back, but right behind the driver's seat. We weren't sure after the crash if he was going to pull through or not. He had some pretty bad injuries. He had broken ribs in his back, punctured collapsed lung, torn diaphragm, laceration on his liver and kidney. He went through a lot. I believe with just the torn diaphragm injury, they told him he had like a 20% chance to live because that pretty much controls your breathing. So he couldn't really breathe on his own.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I think 3 days after the crash, he was up walking around the hospital.
And he's a strong young man.
Yes, he is.
Was and still is.
So. Absolutely.
Well, all of you I wanted to, and I'm not trying to be sensational, but have you ever seen the police video from that night?
I've only seen parts of mm-hmm. it. I haven't watched all of it. Mm-hmm. I haven't really looked at all the pictures.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't know if I'm ready to see all that.
That would be painful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever will be ready.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So if it comes, it mm-hmm. comes, and I'll watch it, look at it, but.
Right. Because, that some of that video, the police video, is in the video documentary, and Jared is depicted.
Yep.
Just right after the crash.
Yeah, the first civilians that were on scene. They were able to get him out of the vehicle because the Jeep was on fire
mm-hmm.
in the engine compartment.
Yeah. Again, we're talking on Recovery Chronicles with Taylor Berhov, a powerful, very we're gifted to have you on the program, being so free, being so open.
Absolutely.
And I was going to say that this video, if any of you would like to see it, There's a short version and there's a long version. The video has its own website, and that's momentsofimpact.info. I made sure it was there this morning. I mean, because I knew we were going to record this radio program today. So you woke up in the hospital. So go from the, if you would, go from the crash to the hospital, or when you woke up in the hospital and what happened next.
Well, I'll start off kind of before the bar. Yeah. It was an ordinary day. Jared and I were roommates at our apartment. We're living together, and invited a few people over to kind of pregame, as we called it, before we went to the bar. There was a costume contest that night at the bar, and ended up driving to the bar. I remember driving there. I remember getting to the bar. I remember mostly who was all there that we talked to. I even remember some of the conversations, and gets to a point where I don't remember anything. And then the next thing I know, I woke up in the hospital. There was a nurse standing right next to my bed. She really wasn't saying anything to me. My parents were kind of over in the corner, and they're just kind of like, hang on. And I thought that was weird. And my friends were standing in the doorway in the hall, but they weren't coming in to see me. So my first initial thought was, I drank too much last night. They had to pump my stomach. Because I was on pain medication, so I wasn't feeling any pain. I had no idea.
You mean they had injected you previously? Little bit earlier?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, I guess I woke up in the ER when they first got me to the hospital, and I guess I was freaking out. They sedated me so they could finish examining me and make sure I didn't
perhaps they put that in your IV or what have you.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
And so my first thought was I must have drank too much. And well, obviously I did. But then the nurse said she'd be right back. And then a detective walked in. Mm-hmm. Then I knew it was a little bit more serious. I thought, man, I must have left the bar last night. I must have hit somebody's parked car. Now I'm getting charges pressed against me for that, or charged against me. Or maybe I hit somebody's property on the way home. And he introduced himself, asked if I remembered anything. I said, nope, I remember a certain part of being at the bar. That's it. He then proceeded to tell me that I was in an automobile crash last night. And he asked, by chance, would you have known who might have been with you? I said, I have no idea. Told me Jared Turner, Trevor Erie, Charlie Baim, and Eastman Nadu were in my vehicle.
And this is all public information, of course.
Yep, all public information.
Yep.
And then he proceeded to tell me that there were three fatalities. Mm-hmm. And it was Trevor Erie, Charlie Baim, Eastman Nadu. And then he told me that Jared Turner was in critical condition in the ICU at Med Center 1 at the time. And I was at, I believe it was St. A's back then, St. Alexis.
And when did you see Jared next? Because that is a powerful story, too.
The first time I saw Jared, I was in the hospital for 24 hours, and then they released me. And the first thing I wanted to do was go see Jared. And I dropped everything I was doing. I said, Mom, Dad, please take me to the hospital to go see Jared. I don't care what we have to do. Just, I want to make sure he's okay. Well, when we got there, they wouldn't let anybody in since he was in critical condition at the ICU. The nurses just kind of said, if you'd like, you can go in the waiting room. And if anything changes, we'll come let you know. Well, that was the first moment when I ran into Jared's family. You know, in my mind, I didn't even think who's going to be in the waiting room. You know, his parents, his family. So I was scared at that moment. You know, I didn't know what his mom or dad or grandparents were going to do, how they were going to react. His mom just came up and hugged me. She said, everything's going to be okay.
Wow. And Jared, more forgiveness.
Exactly. And Jared's going to pull through. I think I stayed for a little over an hour, kind of talked with them, and some friends were there too. And right before I left, she said, when Jared wakes up, I'll give you a phone call. 2 days later.
2 days later.
I received that phone call, dropped everything I was doing, and went to see Jared. And when I walked into his room, I got a look from him like, what are you doing here?
Really?
What could you possibly want? You know, it was just kind of a moment for me that I lost a fourth friend to this. that was kind of where I was for my, you know, in my mind. I know I've talked with Jared recently here, or not recently, but after, you know, when we started talking again, you know, he didn't know what to say. It was one of those moments where he didn't know what to say.
He didn't expect you, I suppose.
Yeah, kind of along those lines. But it's, a lot of people, when something like this happens, they don't, a lot of times they don't know what to say.
He didn't know what to say either.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was kind of that moment for me where I thought, you know, he's not my friend anymore. And I stayed for a little bit and said my goodbyes, and that was kind of that. And I would say a year maybe that Jared reached out to my parents and started talking with them and asked if he could possibly get in touch with me while I was incarcerated. And he actually came to visit me quite a few times.
Wow.
And to this day, I'm grateful to say that he's one of my best friends.
Yeah, that's, again, it's so many of these stories of tragedy have this wonderful element of forgiveness, you know, and it's it just paints the world a brighter color.
Yeah.
I know you've heard me tell this story, but the day we went to Mandan High School, which is where all these young men came from, or
went to school.
Went to school at Mandan High, and you were the guest speaker that day, and I had the honor of introducing you. And of course, all my kids went to Mandan High School, and this was in the auditorium.
Yep.
And it was jammed. I mean, I
packed.
We were breaking the fire code.
Yeah.
I mean, it was. There were kids in the aisles. I mean, and they were
in the front and the
everywhere,
aisles.
Sitting in the whole open front area, and they were up in the booth, and just everywhere, and teacher
staff. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, and the principal, of course, and but it was. I introduced you. We played the short version of the video, and then you spoke. And the way I describe it is you could have heard a pin drop, and everybody, not everybody, but I mean, there was so much, there were so many tears shed that day in the auditorium. I mean, these were our students. This is our high school. This is the home. Part of the story of our school.
Home turf. Yeah.
Yeah. That, Taylor, that was so powerful. I'm sure it was for you too.
Absolutely. Yeah. That one really hits home. You know, like I said, it was home turf for all of us.
And your mother and father were there. Yes.
Yep. And Jared and his wife were there.
I was going to say that Jared and his really new wife, and it was so good to see him because I had interviewed him for the video and to meet his new wife and right in the front row there.
Yeah. It's, wow. It's kind of a, once again, another kind of symbol of forgiveness, but also support too.
Yeah.
That he came to, you know, support me and see the presentation and stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, it means a lot. Little moments like that we don't think would impact us as much as they do. Hence the title, Moments of Impact.
Moments of Impact. That's right. If one thing would have changed night, it could have been a totally different night.
Yep.
But it changed your life, and it changed and you've allowed it, let me say, you've allowed it to, you know, to change your life in a positive way. I mean, you're in recovery, you're doing this prevention work.
Yep.
Dedicating the rest of your life to doing this prevention work.
Absolutely. And, anything I can do to help. Like we say, if we can stop that one person, it's worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. That day at the high school, I mean, I probably left shortly after the presentation was over, but did you get a chance to speak to any of the teachers that day and any of the students?
After the presentation, yeah, a few students. They always usually come up, they'll ask questions if they didn't want to ask them in front of their peers. Sometimes they have personal questions or situations they'll ask help for, or what do I think about it? Sometimes it's just feedback.
Yeah.
Simple, man, your message has a huge impact on me. It totally opened my eyes to the party scene, you know, just drinking, anything. And it's moments like that, especially from the students, that help reinforce what you're trying to do. It makes you tell yourself, I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Let's keep this ball rolling. Mm-hmm. And then to mm-hmm. see all the teachers and staff again that are still there that I had as teachers, yes. it's amazing because they saw us grow from 9th to 12th grade. And then to see now, you know, they heard about the crash and whatnot, but to see what all the, how some of us have grown up and what we're trying to do with this message is that it was incredible to them.
I could tell it was a very emotional afternoon for the teachers who were there and listening. What are some of the questions that you get from these young people when you go out and speak?
The biggest one would be if I got to see my daughter while I was incarcerated.
I'm glad you brought that up. That's right. You have a daughter who is how old now?
8 and a half.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's growing way too fast. That was the biggest question. I guess a lot of the girls stick with that when I mention my daughter. I kind of leave it open, so they do ask questions about that stuff. Big one is...
What was the answer to that question as far as seeing your daughter?
I was... once I was able to transfer to the minimum custody facility, my mother and her mother decided that it was about a good time, a safer environment than the penitentiary to mm-hmm. come and visit me. And I am grateful that her mother allowed her to come. That was when we were really able to kind of keep building our relationship, because she was only 2 years old when I first got incarcerated. And then I wasn't able to really see her the time I was at the penitentiary, just on the phone rarely, you know, and I was able to keep her attention spanned on dad. Mm-hmm. It's hard to do that, but yeah, it was great to see her in person. Now that I'm out, we're able to build our relationship a lot more. I can call her, text her whenever I want. She can do the same. She can call me. We FaceTime all the time.
Nice.
So it's nice when I...
She's in another state,
correct? Yes. Yeah. She's in North Carolina mm-hmm. with her mother and her stepdad. So.
Yeah. And now, have you seen her face-to-face? I mean, beyond FaceTime since you've been paroled?
On FaceTime, yes. Yeah,
no, I mean in person is what I should say.
Oh, in person.
Say.
Sorry. Yeah. No, not yet. Yeah. She's in school, so sure. It's hard to pull away from the school yeah. for a weekend. But I believe the beginning of June is the last of her school. So, and they plan hopefully on coming back still. So
good. Back to North Dakota.
Back to North Dakota. They both have family up here still.
Of course, you can probably. Being on parole, what are the rules? Can you leave the state?
I could leave the state if it is approved by my parole officer.
Right.
You just pretty much have to set up an itinerary where you're going to go, if you're staying overnight, where you're going to stay, how long are you going to be gone, what are you going to be doing. Just pretty much lay out everything there, and then it's up to him to either approve it or not. If he does, you have to buy a travel permit for, I think it was like $10 or something, but it's just to notify any law enforcement if we get pulled over and they run my name. It'll flag that I'm a parolee from North Dakota.
Sure.
So it's just to tell them that, hey, they know he's here. It's okay.
Yeah.
So then if that happened anyways, I would have to call my parole officer and just be like, hey, we got pulled over. They ran my name. Just letting you know.
So back to it. And let me say again that our guest today on Recovery Chronicles is Taylor Berhout. And and we're going a full hour. And guess what? We only have about 10 minutes left. See, so see how quickly it goes.
Yeah, it goes by fast.
But because of... You know, we wanted to hear your whole story as much as possible. We wanted to go a whole hour. This is usually a half-hour program. But not only are you a person in long-term recovery, but, you know, you also have just quite a story. And back to your prevention work, can you now leave the state to make these presentations, and you know, we're possibly working with North Dakota Department of Transportation and et cetera.
Yeah, since I've been released now, yes, I will be able to leave the state to do my presentations. One of the restrictions of when I was still incarcerated, since I was a ward of the state,
sure,
by law, no matter how much they, you know, wanted to allow me to go outside the state to do it, I couldn't. Just, it was that boundary. I wasn't allowed on the reservations either because it's a federal land. So it's,
sure.
That's not their choice. It's just, it's a mm-hmm. part of the law. They couldn't allow it. So it was just little boundaries that were set, not by their choice. But now, since I'm released, I'm able to go anywhere. And like I said, if I have to go out of state, obviously I let my PO know everything. This is where I'm going to be doing this. I'm going to be gone this long, and he should have no problem with it.
Yeah. I would imagine that there would be other departments of transportation around the country that certainly may want you to be a keynote speaker or a guest speaker or a panelist at their different events and annual meetings, what have you. Have you talked to DOT about any of that?
Yeah, I've talked to them a little bit. Yeah. They gave me a couple websites for a national level speaking, you know, speaker stuff, engagements and stuff like that. So it's just, I still have to get all that figured out, check out the website, figure out who I need to talk to, get those scheduled. Still scheduling the ones in North Dakota here, so they're still coming. Yeah. And it's been amazing. I wasn't sure how well it would still take off, you know, once I was released. And when we first started doing this, you know, you were there at the beginning when I first started this. We weren't really sure where we were going to go with it. And it picked up and took off, and I'm grateful that all you guys helped me. I wouldn't be, even you, Tom, where I am today.
Well, thank you. What was the last high school?
The last high school. Yeah.
Was it a few weeks ago?
It was Steele.
Okay.
And Medina.
Okay. All
right. I did them both of them the same day.
Yeah. We've done that. We did that before. I know.
Yep. Two a day. Yeah.
Two in one day that were at least within a dozen or so miles.
Yep, they were the same direction. It's nice when the schools, you know, partner up the same day like that, because it helps out. It's one trip instead of multiple ones the same direction.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I remember another presentation, and I'll think of the city, but it was east of here and then a little bit south, but I know law enforcement was involved. I don't know if the police officer introduced you, but he was allowed to say a few words. His message was very emotional. Yep. You know which one I'm talking about?
That sheriff,
I'll think of the name of the city. It was just...
it's that school that's got three of them combined.
Yeah, I think you go east on 283 and then you drop down on Highway 83. I'll try to think of it. But
yeah, it was that sheriff. Yep, that sheriff. That
was
talked.
Was it the sheriff? Yep, you remember his very powerful message?
Yep. He was talking about, you know, hearing my side of the story and hearing the story and then all the crashes that he's had to deal with, that a lot of times he said when he comes across crashes like that, he's the only person in the area and it takes too much time to get, you know, first responders there to help, because he can only do so much. He's, you know, a sheriff officer. He doesn't have all the equipment he needs. So it's kind of one of those things that he knows, he's seen it firsthand, you know, crashes like that, but he respects what I'm trying to do. You know, it also shows the kids that, you know, a lot of them, they see, oh, it's law enforcement and they're preaching about this and talking about this. And once they hear it come from me, the same thing.
Yes.
And then I say, you know, I have the utmost respect for law enforcement, first responders, because when idiots like me make this decision and cause someone to get hurt or killed, they have the hardest jobs in the world, because they're the ones that have to go to the family's house and tell them that their loved one is gone.
Right. So not everybody can do that.
No.
And not everybody can be an EMT, you know, to show up at crashes and do your best.
It takes a lot of heart to do
that. It does, doesn't it? And you know, these are some very special people. That sheriff that day opened my eyes too. When you're living in a rural area, in a rural state such as North Dakota, and a crash like that happens, you might die just because of the miles involved. I mean, if this guy, you know, he might be miles and miles away. In the meantime, you're not getting any help.
Yeah, if it's the ambulance is half an hour away, and then once they get there, if they're lucky to still be alive, how far do they have to go before they get to the hospital?
Yeah, so Say we've got about 5 minutes left. So, what are your immediate plans, and what are your long term plans? I know you're going to start working again pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm going to start working again here pretty soon. I received a few job offers back out in the oil field. I finally committed to one. Actually, today I got the phone call right before we came here that locked in the job. I finally committed to it because it's a safe environment. The crew that I'm working with, two of the guys I have worked with before, they won't put me in an environment to fail for my sobriety. And I felt comfortable working with them, and it's quick money for me if I can do that for a year or two and then get out and go back to school or something like that. It would help me get back on my feet. It'll be 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. So on my 2 weeks off, I will be able to continue scheduling my presentations. So it works.
Well, and you said do that for maybe a year and a half or more. And any long-term plans?
Like I said, I'd love to go back to school and maybe become a licensed addiction counselor. Yeah. Maybe come work at Heartview.
Well, we'd love to have you. We need to. There is a shortage. There might always be a shortage of mental health counselors and licensed addiction counselors, and so we would welcome that. Welcome you and imagine the credibility, so to speak. I'm a person in long-term recovery, and you know that. And as an addiction counselor, that happens to give me some credibility. And that doesn't make me a better counselor than anybody else. But I personally have thanked God for that little extra credibility that my recovery gives me. And not only that, but as you know, I lost a daughter in a car crash 12 years ago. And so I know the pain of loss, too. And you can't compare loss. Mm-mm. And you can't say, well, your loss is worse than mine or more painful than mine. I mean, but loss is loss.
Yeah, loss is loss, yep.
And it hits everybody differently, and everybody grieves differently. So.
Yep, it's their own process. Sometimes it takes longer than others, and sometimes it never ends.
I'm gonna throw an existential question at you.
That's fine.
But how have you changed?
How
have you changed over the last, you know, do I say 7 years or do I say 8 years? What's changed about you, do you think?
Biggest thing for me, I mean, simply what started it would be the crash.
Mm-hmm.
But that is what jump-started my sobriety, my recovery. And ever since that moment has happened, I've been able to get on the right path for me. I have met amazing people through my journey. I have really had time to sit back and think about who do I want to be, but also who do I need to be, not only for myself, but for my daughter and any future, you know, family that comes along, maybe one day, but also for my parents. You know, it's the biggest thing was time for me. You know, I got to take a step back, process everything, reevaluate my second chance at life now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so it's really set me on the right path.
Sure.
Got a different outlook on life, period, as far as maybe saving money.
Yeah.
I want to travel. Yeah. I want to like go skydiving. I want to do all this fun stuff.
Are you happy to be alive?
Yeah, okay. I am extremely happy to be alive.
You could be dead.
Absolutely.
From that crash.
And I'm going to do everything possible with these presentations also. I want to expand that.
Yeah.
Not so much for me, but for my friends and their families.
Yeah.
And to prevent people from doing
this. You're an inspiration to me and to almost everyone you come in contact with, you know. So thank you so much for being on this on Recovery Chronicles.
I appreciate you having me, Tom.
And for coming to Heartview. And if you do go back to school, you heard me. I'll help you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I mean, I wouldn't mind helping you.
You'll guide me.
Get into the right frame of mind for writing papers, for
example. There you go.
Say, we have a tradition of closing Recovery Chronicles with the Serenity Prayer. So let me say for the last time, our guest has been Taylor Burhau, and we've been talking a lot about the car crash from 2011 and really all sorts of things, his recovery. If you want to get a hold of him, by the way, and to have him as a speaker or something like that, I would say call Tom Regan at Heartview, and I can always, we're open actually 24 hours a day because we run a residential treatment program. So, but let's say the prayer together. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thanks.
Thank you.
this song because I love the man. I know that some of you don't understand. Milk blood to keep from running out. I've seen the needle and the damage done. A little part of it in everyone. But every junkie's like a setting sun.